welcome to another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. What's going on, everybody? Steve here, just saying what's up before the episode. As always, I hope everybody is doing well. I hope everybody is staying safe and healthy, both physically and mentally. What are we doing? What are we keeping busy? What's keeping us sane? Hit us up on Twitter at TLPYW. Hit us up on Instagram at The Last Podcast You'd Want. Me, myself, Waxworks, Waxworks 2, Lost in Time. Dread, the Carl Urban version, Major League, and Caddyshack are the movies that I've watched over this last week just to kind of keep me busy and keep the mental juices flowing of what I'm thinking about in my head and what I'm trying to put on paper. Other than that, this week on the show, we welcome from Season 2 of Ink Master, now currently available on Netflix along with Season 1, Jesse Smith, a very talented artist, and we have a lot of fun talking about movies and other things in this world, in this life, and we're going to get into it. Of course, we're going to have the top 5 movies in the box office and the movies that are coming out this week. Other than that, we're going to get into it. Thank you all for coming on this continuous journey week after week. I love you all for it. And surprise, it's a double week episode. Got another episode coming out right after this. So episodes 117 and 118 coming at you. Why? Because I felt like it and I love you kids. Thanks for coming. Tip the veal. Try the staff. Enjoy the episode.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Coming in at number 5 at the box office this week, we have The Marksman with $782,000. Wonder Woman 1984 stands strong in the 4th position with $805,000. Judas and the Black Messiah comes in at 3rd with $905,000. The Little Things comes in at 2nd with $1.2 million, and The Croods: A New Age still standing in the number 1 spot with $1.7 million. Coming out to the box office this week, we have Tom and Jerry, Crisis, My Zoe, The Killing of Two Lovers, and The Vigil. Those are the top 5 films in the box office, and those are the movies coming out this week. And now, on to the episode. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. Steve here, and I hope everybody's doing well. I hope we're having a great day. We're going to have a fun one today. I bring to the show an extremely talented artist. You might have seen them on Season 2, recently released on Netflix of Ink Master, or maybe Season 7. But today to the show, I bring Mr. Jesse Smith. Jesse, how we doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, man. I'm sorry. We're breaking up. Let me move over here and see if we can get a little better signal.
No, that's all right. And if you
can hear me okay?
I can hear you perfect. If you need to take the camera off, that's all right.
Does that help with the audio for you?
It might a little bit. Sometimes as weird as it is, sometimes the video can create a lag between the sounds. We can go ahead and try it. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'll stop the video and see if that helps.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and restart this and we'll get into it.
Yeah. This time, if you don't mind, can you just tell them that I'm super duper talented instead of just super talented?
Absolutely. I think you're incredibly talented. In reality. With all the work that you've done on the show, but here we go. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. How we doing, everybody? Steve here, coming at you with another episode. And today I bring to the show a guest who you've probably seen on TV, recently released on Netflix, season 2 of Ink Master. You might have also seen him on season 7. He is the super duper incredibly talented Mr. Jesse Smith. Jesse, what's going on today?
What's up, man? That was a great introduction. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming on and doing the show. How's the day treating you so far?
Good, man. It's been really busy. I've got I've got like 5 businesses that I run. So between those 5 businesses, I've got a lot of meetings and just really busy.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time to come on to do the show. Before we start, I'm super interested because as I told you before we started recording, I've watched a ton of seasons of Ink Master. Not a lot. I have 10 tattoos, nothing big, but I love tattooing. I love art, all of that. How did you get into it? How old were you when you started drawing? How old were you when you started tattooing?
So I've been drawing my entire life, as far as I can remember. I've got sketchbooks from back when I was 12 years old, just full of stuff. That was when I really started collecting my designs and stuff to kind of show everyone. Prior to that, I was still drawing and stuff. But I started tattooing back in 98. I think I was 20 years old. I'm 44 now. So I was probably 20, 21. I'm 44 now. So I've been tattooing for 23 years, and I was actually in the military at the time, and I was still doing art, and I was hanging out with a bunch of artists. I started drawing caricatures of Busch Gardens, and I met a bunch of other artists, and they introduced me to this guy named Carlos Marshall, who was tattooing out of his house. I had just got out of prison, and I would hang out with him, and I'd draw stuff, and he would tattoo it on people sometimes. And then one day he just kind of asked me, he's like, "Hey man, you want to do your own tattoos?" And I was like, "Sure." So he kind of showed me how to make a little ghetto gun out of a toothbrush and a Walkman motor. And then I just started tattooing people.
And the rest, as they say, is history. Well, I think you've got some really good stuff. I mean, not to mention the fact, as silly as it sounds, I'm a big professional wrestling fan. So every time I see Jeff Hardy on TV, I think to myself, "Oh, that dude's got a tattoo by Jesse Smith."
The funny thing is I did that tattoo on him, and I don't think he's acknowledged it since. I've tried to reach out to him, see how it healed up and all that stuff, and haven't got a reply. And I'd love to make sure at least held up well, because doing tattoos on that show, it's kind of like get it done as quick as you can.
In and out.
I'd love to touch up in all those tattoos if I can.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is you never see it with Jeff Hardy, because he wears long pants. He doesn't wear shorts. He doesn't wear tights. He wears long, long pants. So you never see, the most you see is the tattoo that's on his arm and his back. You've never seen anything that he has below. And I know he's probably got like both legs done. The guy's probably got most of his body done, but it's always fun for me on that. But like I said, I'm a big fan of Ink Master, so I love having you on the show. But with that, let's get into a question I always love to start with, and that's, have you ever walked out of a movie in the movie theater?
I don't think I ever have, but if I had watched The English Patient in the movie theater, I probably would have walked out of that one. Okay. I remember watching that on VHS with a girl I was dating at the time, and I wish I could have walked out.
Absolutely.
It was just very long and drawn out in my mind, but who knows, maybe I'd watch it now and I'd have a different perspective on it, but I think I was 20 years old back then. It was just really drawn out.
Yeah, The English Patient is a very long, dramatic, it's what I like to call a slow burn. And I don't think there's really an explosion. Like Joker is a very slow burn, but there's a great explosion at the end of that slow burn. An English Patient is just a slow burn through and through. I feel you on that. There's a ton of movies that I've watched at home that I praise, I praise whatever higher being there is, that I never took the time to go see it in the theater.
For sure.
But
so what about you? Have you walked out on anything?
Oh yeah. I've walked out on a ton. And with that, I worked for movie theaters. So I've actually walked out on movies that I've seen for free.
Oh, wow.
First movie I ever walked out of was Joe Dirt.
Oh, geez.
But that was because my girlfriend wanted to leave. I actually revisited the film and I loved it.
Oh, man.
I walked out of Envy, which had Jack Black, Ben Stiller, Amy Poehler, Christopher Walken, like amazing cast, horrible film.
Like something I'd walk out on.
I walked out on Ultraviolet. I walked out on The Corpse Bride. I just recently remembered that one. Like there are movies that you don't remember, let alone seeing or walking out of. And I just recently remembered I walked out of Corpse Bride.
Oh, wow. Did you ever watch Bruno?
I saw it for free and I would have walked out of it if the person I had not gone with was my ride. But
oh my God, I love that shit. Me and my buddy were watching it and so many people were walking out of that movie and I was just like, that made me want to watch it more. Just knowing that it pissed people off that much. I just thought it was amazing.
So I'm not even going to say like it pissed me off because I love Bo Rat. I thought Bo Rat and the cultural learnings to make a great nation of Kazakhstan or whatever that was. I thought that was hilarious. I loved the new Bo Rat one that came out. I just don't particularly care for the character of Bruno. He doesn't necessarily piss me off. I don't know. There were just things in that film that I just, like, I understand he was pushing the limit. I understand that what he was doing was really trying to, you know, get a rise out of people and all of that, which is exactly what he did. And I'm sure why he never made another Bruno film, because you can actually, there's a full thing, that final scene in the rodeo where he kisses a man.
Yeah.
You should go, if you haven't already, he does a full, like what they had to do. They made a full metal tunnel under the ground for him to get out of, to get out to make sure that they didn't fucking kill him.
Wow.
I love
that though, man. That's so awesome. He's such a creative guy. And you know, I know everybody's got their mixed feelings about him, but I just am very impressed with his originality and his ability to get through these scenarios.
Oh yeah. And I loved a lot of what he's done. I loved the Ali G show. All of the characters that he comes up with are great. There was just something, and I might have to go revisit it, but watching it the first time, the person that I went with had already seen it. And he was like, oh, this movie is so amazing. You have got to see it. And I was like, okay, I'll see a free movie. Like,
That new Borat was amazing too, man.
I was laughing so hard at this new Borat. Like, it's so amazing. And I'm not going to give anything away for anyone that hasn't seen it, but that twist at the end, fucking amazing. Loved it. With that though, we go kind of opposite spectrum, a movie that you walked out of to a movie that you could just watch every day, whether you need music or whether you need a movie for background noise, or you're just flipping the proverbial channel and you come across a movie you love.
I mean, I've got a couple of them. I feel like all those Borat and Bruno movies, I wouldn't say it's like my favorite movies in the entire world, but watching those over and over, it's kind of like watching Dave Chappelle show. It's like you kind of forget about certain skits that happen in there, and then you go back to it and you see them again or get to see them from a different light. But I would say that the movies that I could watch every day are ones that just feel like they have all like these little, they're like little movies within a big movie. Like I like The Gentlemen. Have you seen that?
I really want to see that. That's I want to say Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie. I mean, it's one of my favorite movies I've seen recently. Wolf of Wall Street, a lot of the Quentin Tarantino movies, I like those because they just feel like there's a bunch of little scenes in there that you're like looking forward to, and they almost feel like they're separate little movies within the movie.
Sure. Especially with something like Pulp Fiction, where you get like three separate storylines within one movie. So
exactly.
I really want to see The Gentlemen. I loved Man from U.N.C.L.E. I want to say Richie did that one. And I want to say, I mean, I may be off. I may be off, but I want to say he did Snatch and Lock, Stock. And
yeah, he definitely did those.
And I love all of those. Like Snatch is probably my favorite, just for the Brad Pitt storyline. And that's another movie where you have multiple storylines that are happening because you have the storyline with Dennis Ferreira coming over from New York to with the Diamonds. And then you have the story with Jason Statham and then Jason Statham and Brad Pitt. And then like there are like three or four different storylines in Snatch that are just, you know, amazing. That's right. Probably my favorite, but I definitely want to check out The Gentlemen. I've heard really super good things about it.
It definitely put Guy Ritchie up there for me. Cause I always like Guy Ritchie's movies, Snatch and Lock, Stock and stuff like that. But I feel like every time he comes out with a movie, I like Lock, Stock, but then Snatch, I felt like was better. And honestly, I feel like The Gentleman is better than Snatch, which is saying a lot because Snatch was great.
Yeah. So, all right.
When you got an artist or a director or whatever that's constantly outdoing themselves, like that's pretty difficult to do.
I'll absolutely agree with you. And so I'll have to check that one out, The Gentleman. All right. With that, we go to our next question, and that's a movie that takes you back to a more youthful time in your life, a movie from your childhood.
Oh, man, I got a couple of those. I've got Neverending Story, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, Big Trouble in Little China, Goonies, Gremlins, Ghostbusters, Break-In.
I could talk about all of those.
how old are you?
I am 38. I'll be 39 this year.
So you're somewhat familiar with those.
All of them, with the exception of Break-In. I've never seen Break-In, but I have seen Break-In 2, Electric Boogaloo.
There you go. Well, Break-In 2 is better than Break-In 1, in my opinion. But so you saw the good one.
Yeah. Oh, man. But I love all of those. Those were definitely influential movies from my childhood as well. Let's just skim over a couple. What did you start with? Because the first one that popped in my mind was Labyrinth. But I know you said like two or three before that.
Neverending Story and Dark Crystal.
Okay.
I mean, they're all kind of the same genre, those three.
Well, Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, definitely both Henson, definitely both. Even Neverending Story, sure, all three. Puppeteering, definitely wild, imaginary, very, very out there. What will always stick out to me for Neverending Story, other than Falcor, is going to be the two statues with the laser eyes.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the funny thing is like I've I get a lot of people that ask me where my art comes from and stuff like that, and I do seminars and stuff and kind of like preface with where I came from. And when you look at movies like that, you look at Saturday morning cartoons, you look at comic books and Garbage Pail Kids, it's not really a far cry to look at my artwork stemming from those things. You know, those were all kind of feeding the brain back then.
Sure, absolutely. Especially, I mean, you mentioned Labyrinth. I mean, and that takes two things that I absolutely love in a movie. It's great fantasy and it's got great music. I love a good musical.
Yeah.
And anything that really... That stretches your mind, that makes you look at it and like Bluto and the little houseworm. Like there are so many great things. And it's crazy growing up, because like I grew up loving a British TV show called Red Dwarf, which is just this British sci-fi TV series. Come to find out that one of the characters on the show is actually one of the creatures that can remove their head and their arms. And he's actually one of the main singing creatures in Labyrinth for that scene.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. But Labyrinth's got a great one. You mentioned, I mean, Goonies, you mentioned Ghostbusters. Those are movies that I could watch every day. Absolutely no question. For me, I'm not gonna lie, I'm more of a Ghostbusters 2 than a Ghostbusters 1.
Okay.
Ghostbusters 2 is actually the first movie that I remember seeing in the theater. My mom actually took me out of school early. In like first or second grade to go catch like an afternoon showing of it.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, but those are great.
Gremlins.
Gremlins. Gremlins is the Christmas movie that everyone forgets is a Christmas movie.
Yeah. I never thought about it either. Honestly.
Gizmo is a Christmas gift.
Yeah, you're totally right.
We get Phoebe Cates' story about her dad as Santa Claus and dying in the chimney.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and that's a dark one. That's a real, and you can take Gremlins to Gremlins 2, and they're two completely different films. Like Gremlins is just a dark comedy with some fantasy added into it. And the original script, the mom was actually supposed to die. The Gremlins were supposed to kill. Oh, wow. Were supposed to kill the mom. And then you get Gremlins 2, which is just a goofy, over the top, silly, family film.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever watched Gremlins 2 now that I think about it.
Oh, Gremlins, you should. If you haven't, I'd say you should watch it at least once. I think it's super funny. They leave this bit in because when you saw it in the theater, there was a bit where like the Gremlins took over the projection room. And uh-huh. then they like go into the movie theater and Hulk Hogan is in the theater. And they're like, Mr. Hogan, you've got to get these Gremlins to put it back on. He's like, you Gremlins, you better put it back on, brother.
Oh,
or I'm going to come drop the leg on you. And then the movie starts right back up. I love Gremlins too. I love it.
Did you ever see any of the, I think they had Never Ending Story 2, maybe. I don't know if they might have had 3.
Saw it in the theater. I remember going to see Neverending Story 2 in the theater. And 3, they did make, that was direct to video, and Jack Black is actually in Neverending Story 3.
Oh my goodness. And then it ended. And then the story ended, which is fucking crazy.
It's supposed to be never ending. That's those are some great ones. All of those movies have great practical visual effects. I mean, you can even take Ghostbusters with the ghosts and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and Zool and the Gozer, all of that. And it's just great effects. Like every movie you talked about is just like visually stunning for the 1980s.
Yeah. Except for Gleam in the Cube. But Gleam in the Cube was like, I was a skater, man, so.
Now, wait a minute, man. If you're going to be talking about Christian Slater, you talk about Gleaming the Cube, all right, man. But you got to remember, man, I also did True Romance. I did Cuffs.
Yeah.
No one ever acknowledges Cuffs, man, but I love Cuffs.
Gleaming the Cube, man. That was like, as a skater back then, that was the dude had a fucking one of those like a steel diamond skateboard is made of metal and he's like ramping over highways and shit. It was awesome.
Oh, it was badass for skaters back then. Yeah, I one day was watching just a random Christian Slater thing and I heard his voice, man, and I was like, wait a minute, I can kind of do Christian Slater.
Yeah,
I definitely grew up watching a lot of Slater though. My buddy and I do a separate podcast where we talk about movies that were number one in the box office. And we actually just recorded Broken Arrow.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
And is that one good?
Oh, have you never seen Broken Arrow?
I don't remember. I don't remember it.
It's John Travolta and Christian Slater, 1996, directed by John Woo. This is like right before John Woo did Face Off with Travolta and Cage.
Gotcha.
I thoroughly enjoy it. If you have Amazon Prime, it's on Amazon Prime for free right now.
Okay, I'll check it out.
I definitely think it's a fun and entertaining film. If you know John Woo and you don't mind over the top action, like
yeah,
it's super fun. And it's John Travolta and Christian Slater. Sure. With that though, we come to essentially our next question, and that comes to directors. Do you happen to have a favorite director, someone you enjoy the collective works of?
You know, I mean, I just based off of the most of the movies that I was telling you I like, you know, Guy Ritchie, Martin Scorsese, J.J. Abrams, Christopher Nolan, James Cameron, you know, Quentin Tarantino, Sacha Baron Cohen, I like him because, I mean, I don't know if he's even really a director, but I like the creativity behind what he does.
Absolutely. Yeah, lots of great ones out there. You mentioned some, of course, most of them Oscar winning in one way or another. And people that throughout their career have continued to put out a creative flow and a continuous content. let alone you mentioned J.J. Abrams, the only man that's been able to work in both Star Wars and Star Trek.
Right. Like, interesting, people. Right?
Yeah, yeah. He's directed both. He directed the first Star Trek. I think he did the second Star Trek. And I know he did, episode 7. So when it comes down to it. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I remember thinking that maybe not even a week ago, I remember seeing, is a new Star Trek coming out?
There's talks of a new Star Trek coming out.
Oh, I could have sworn they had said something about J.J. Abrams directing.
Well, there's been talks that Quentin Tarantino wants to direct a Star Trek film.
Oh, geez, I can't even imagine that. That's like me drawing the Mona Lisa.
But it would be a fun, you drawing the Mona Lisa, much like Quentin Tarantino doing Star Trek, would be a very fun and interesting representation and concept.
Yeah, it would. I think it could also, I don't know. I don't know that I'd want to see that. I feel like I like Quentin where he's at, you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, I was going to say with J.J. Abrams, one thing I really like about him, I like the whole Cloverfield thing. I'd love it's so creative and it's so the kind of like subtle interlocking stories and all this like kind of side stuff that's happening. I mean, that stuff's super fun for me.
I really love the first Cloverfield movie, saw it in the theater. Cloverfield Lane, the one with John Goodman that came out.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you know this. That wasn't actually even supposed to be part of the Cloverfield series. That was a movie that was written, essentially the entire story that was written was the story. The only thing they did is they added in the alien aspect of Cloverfield.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, man, that's the part I love the most. I love it when you're watching a movie and you think it's going in one direction and it just flips on you. You ever watch, Hitchcock with Will Smith?
Oh, no, it's Hancock.
Where he's
the superhero, and then you end up finding out that they're actually fallen angels.
Yeah, and then you also find out that his girlfriend or whatever was a superhero and they can't be together and all that stuff. I was just like, wow, that just took a whole different turn on me, you know?
First movie that always comes to mind for me for that is From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh yeah, I love those.
If you don't know what you're walking into from Dusk Till Dawn, an hour into the movie, it becomes a vampire film, and you're just like, "What the fuck just happened?"
I love that. I mean, those are the ones that I think are best is when you go in with no expectations. I did that with The Matrix actually. Like, I was actually living in Heidelberg, Germany at the time, and so we never got any movie previews.
All right,
and so we would just go to the movies, cost like $2 on the military base. We never really knew what we were watching. And sometimes we'd be like, yeah, let's just go to this movie on Friday. And we walked into The Matrix. And I remember 20 minutes in, I was like, holy shit, what the hell have I walked into? And I remember thinking specifically, I was like, if I got my money back, like if I walked out of the theater right now, I feel like I got my money's worth. Like, I just thought the movie was so awesome right from the first 20 minutes.
And you're absolutely right. That movie came out in, I want to say, 99. I saw that movie 3 times in the theaters.
Wow.
I paid for it full price 3 times. I mean, that's not the movie I've seen the most and paid for. That'd be Jurassic Park. I saw Jurassic Park 9 times in the theaters. Well,
wow.
I didn't pay. My parents paid 9 times for me to see that because I was in 6th grade. I was like 11 years old, like 10, 11 years old. And
I'm kind of getting the impression that you like movies, man.
I kind of have 2 podcasts where all we do is talk about movies.
That's awesome.
In reality, my mom worked at a video store from the time I was 9 to about 16. I've worked at 3 different movie theaters for over a combined period of almost 4 to 5 years. I love movies. Some people remember historical bouts. Some people remember mathematical equations. Some people can memorize entire, you know, verses in a book. I know movies.
Have you ever heard of Colin Christian?
Mm-mm.
So he's a really amazing artist. within the, he's not a tattoo artist, but he's an artist within the community of artists that I kind of roll in circles with. And he has an Instagram, and I think it's Colin Christian Movies or something like that. But he, every day he's putting up some content about a new movie that's out or a movie that he's liked in the past, and really breaking it down about, you know, what he likes about the cinematography. You know, it might be something that you'd be interested in, just being that you really love movies and all.
You said Colin Christian?
Yeah, I think it's with one L, C-O-L-I-N. Let me see if I could find it on my side. but yeah, it's really good stuff. I really enjoy reading it. If he recommends something, I typically will watch it. Colin Christian. So it's Colin Christian, Colin Christian's movie
page. Got it right here. Following. Yeah. I got it. I'll follow it. I'm excited. I love movies. I've been doing the show for over 2 years. I have no plans of really stopping anytime soon. Like, I'm not doing it for the money, because I'm not making money from it anymore. I do it purely for the joy of talking to movies, and in reality, being able to sit down and talk with people who I've watched on TV and I've enjoyed the work of. I've had people from MasterChef. I've had people from Hell's Kitchen. I've had Ink Master, you know, and I'd love to get more. At the wide variety, I've had professional, you know, professional actors, comedians, wrestlers that were with the WWE, the people that I've been able to get on the show, I'm truly blessed for, merely because it's just talking about something I love and literally could talk about for hours.
Yeah, man, you should be Siskel and Ebert or something like that. What is it? Is that their name?
Yeah, it was Siskel and Ebert. That's essentially what the other show I do is. It's called This Week at the Box Office. It's me and my buddy Travis, and we talk about movies that were number one in the box office the week they were number one. And then we talk about the whole film, and then we essentially say whether we think it was deserving to be number one in the box office or not. Like, it's a full breakdown of it.
Would you say most of the time you guys agree or disagree?
For the most part, we're pretty much spot on. There are a few times. I'll give you a prime example. We just did Next Friday. He loved it. I did not. And it was my first time watching it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess my question is, do you guys typically agree with what should be number one, or do you guys typically disagree with what should be number
one? Oh, we usually agree that it should be number one in the box office. Most movies that are number one. And we tend to pick movies because we have a full range from 1982 to 2019. I have a list of every movie that was in the box office week one, week two, January through December. I have every movie. So we just pick them out. Like, we have every movie until the end of the year planned.
Awesome.
Yeah, but we tend to pick movies that we love. And he's done movies that I haven't seen. Like, he did Hardball and Remember the Titans. I'm not a big sports guy, so I don't really watch sports movies. And I loved them. I thought they were great. I thought they were fun. And I thought they were deserving of number one in the box office. There are very few films... I don't think there's been a single one that I've watched that I said I don't think deserved at least 1 week at number one. So,
gotcha. Cool, man.
But with that, we do get to the next question, which is favorite genre. Do you have a favorite particular genre of film?
You know, I'm really into psychological thrillers. you know, psychological thrillers, sci-fi, action. The ones that I'm really not too much into, or believe it or not, are like comedy.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of times I typically don't watch comedy, but I like Sacha Baron Cohen. So that, of course, that's weird. But I typically won't watch comedy in the movie theaters. I don't know why. I never feel satisfied when I walk out. You know, I'm like, the stories are typically pretty shallow. There's not a lot of thought behind them. It's just like, what can we do that's goofy and crazy, you know?
Sure. You first mentioned psychological thrillers. I'm a big fan of psychological thrillers. What are one or two good thrillers that pop up in your mind that you like the most?
Man, I can't, you know, during the pandemic, I was like basically binge watching a bunch of psychological thrillers on Netflix, but I can't remember. I think there was one called, I think it was Extinction or something like that. And that was one that flipped on you too, where the humans thought that the aliens were aliens, but then they ended up being the opposite. They were the aliens.
Oh, did you see that? No, I haven't seen that.
Oh man, that was one where you're watching it, and then it kind of, I think it was called Extinction or something. Right. There was definitely a guy in there that I recognized, but and then there was another one. I don't know if this would be considered a psychological thriller, but it was the one where there was like a ton of levels, all these different levels, and then the food would start at the top and it would slowly go down.
Snowpiercer?
No, it was, the whole thing took place in this like world, like in this big tower.
Oh, you know what? I think
it was Italian or something like that.
I think I know what you're talking about. I think I may have seen something for it.
But it was very conceptual. I really like the conceptual thought process behind it. It was basically talking about how, you know, the people at the top, they get all the, because it basically was just the like an elevator, and the people at the very top, they would get
the best
all food. The food, and they would just grab whatever they want, and they'd, you know, throw it back in whatever they want, and then it would go to the next level, and it would go. By the time I got to the bottom, there was nothing.
Yeah,
and it would
I think I've seen this movie.
All the people at the bottom were like killing themselves and stuff like that, and you know, what I got from the show was essentially, you know, there's enough food for everybody, but you give it to the top first, and then, you know, the people that are in poverty are doing all this shitty shit. And then the people at the top are like, why are they doing all this shitty shit? That's because you're fucking hoarding all the food.
I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty sure I've seen this movie. Like, with the excessive amounts I watch, like, I'm 99% sure I've seen this film, or I started watching this and I might have stopped, but I think
was all dubbed or subtitled or something. I want to say it was in either Italian or Spanish. But yeah, it was real fun. But that Extinction one is a little more palatable. I think the people who, you know, maybe don't want to watch those kind of like B-rated movies would watch the other one. I think it was Extinction.
Okay. For me, whenever I think of a good psychological thriller, I always go to number 23. Have you seen the number 23 with Jim Carrey?
Yeah. Oh, wait. No, there was 21. That was the card game.
The card game. Right? Yeah. With
number 23. I think I did watch that movie. What was that about again?
Jim Carrey and his wife is played by, I believe, Virginia Madsen. And he essentially is a dog catcher. And he finds this book called The Number 23 and he starts reading it. And then the number 23 starts revolving around in his life. And he starts seeing all these idiocracies. I think that's what it is. But the similarities between his life and the life of the character that he's reading. And he just...
Idiosyncrasies, right?
Thank you. That's...
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for. It's like, I don't want to give away too much on it. But it's like Jim Carrey just slowly thinking that he might be going insane. And it's a very fun, intriguing, keeps you going type of film. That one, Shutter Island, which is Scorsese, is a great psychological thriller. I don't know if you could consider Zodiac, David Fincher's Zodiac with Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo, you know, Iron Man and the Hulk teaming up before they were Iron Man and the Hulk.
To me, that seems like more of a thriller, but I guess it's psychological thriller. I don't know. Anything that's got like a, you know, I don't know, like a kind of deep writing, kind of twist, metaphorical, like side parallel story type thing. I always like all those, but I'm gonna have to watch that 23 again because I feel like that 23 sounds pretty rad.
It's really in reality, it's probably one of my favorite Jim Carrey films, and it's probably my favorite psychological thriller.
Funny how that works, right? When you think of somebody like Jim Carrey playing a role like that, and then you have like Adam Sandler playing like Uncut Gems or Punch Drunk Love or something like that. It's like, you know, those storylines. Or was that other one? Was it Spanglish he was in as well?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty good. The second time I watched it, I felt like it was kind of corny. But for whatever reason, I liked it the first time where he's playing more of a serious role.
I always love when you can get a comedic actor that's taking on a very serious, darker role. Robin Williams did that
in
one summer with three films. He made 1 hour photo in which it was a very dark and he played a very creepy photo developer named, I believe, Silas. He made
Death, I remember that.
He made Death to Smoochie, which is probably one of my favorite Robin Williams movies, where it's just a very dark film. Have you seen Death to Smoochie? It's Robin Williams, Edward Norton.
I don't recall that one.
Oh, that the cast on that alone, Catherine Keener, Edward Norton, Danny DeVito, Robin Williams, Harvey Keitel, or not Harvey Keitel, Harvey Feinstein, the John Stewart. They're just a bunch of, that one I would highly recommend. And then he also made Insomnia with Al Pacino, in which he plays a killer.
So I remember that one.
So Robin Williams in darker roles is great. Another great one that's comedic, but it's a darker one from the 90s, I believe, is The Fisher King, which was done by Terry Gilliam, which is Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams. And that's a super, that's a heartwarming piece. It's not so much comedy. There's comedy to it, but it's very much more a serious film. But that's
Robin. I think I really liked Good Will Hunting, and that wasn't really a normal role that he would be in either. Mm-hmm. It was a little more of a serious role.
Yeah, Good Will Hunting is always a great one. With that though, we'll push along. And with this one, if you don't happen to remember it, it's okay because it is rather odd. But do you remember the first movie that you went to go see in the theaters?
I don't, man. I really don't. You know, I grew up I grew up in Italy. I was in Italy from 83 to 86, which was like between the ages of 6 and 9. So, and we had like a little movie theater on the base, but I don't really recall. The first movie I remember watching was Gremlins, to be honest.
Okay.
But I don't know if that was the one that I watched.
No, that's okay. And like I said, it's an odd one. This one, usually everyone remembers. Do you remember the first movie to give you nightmares?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think I have it between Trolls and Pet Sematary. One of those two.
It was
pretty. I watched Pet Sematary way before I should have, because we thought it was going to be, you know, one thing, and then I don't know if you remember that crippled old lady, and she's
had Zelda. Zelda.
Yeah, it was pretty. That was pretty freaky.
That was pretty freaky.
I remember Trolls, like, I remember being so scared that I went in my parents' bedroom, but I didn't want to get into bed with them because I knew they'd kick me out. So I, like, just slept at the base of their bed.
Okay.
I just kind of, like, slept there for the whole night. But I remember being really freaked out about that.
There you go. Those are both, seeing them at a younger age can be a bit of an impact. For me, I mean, funny enough, Pet Sematary 2. Was the first movie that I really remember giving me nightmares.
Oh wow. I don't know if I watched that one. That was more recent, wasn't it?
Well, that one was in the 90s. I saw it the day before I started fourth or fifth grade.
Gotcha.
And big mistake, because I didn't get any sleep that fucking night. And it's all about seeing movies at a young age. My wife absolutely hates Jeepers Creepers, which I think is such a silly film, like, but it's fun,
right?
And it's because she saw it at such a young age, the creeper legitimately just scared the shit out of her, and sure. she doesn't want it. She's 30, she's 31, 32 now. She doesn't listen, so she's not going to be mad at me forgetting how old she actually is. She still won't really watch, like, we did Jeepers Creepers for the show, and I told her, and she was just like, fuck you. Like, I'm not gonna, she'll watch a lot of the movies I watch. She's like, I don't want to watch that one. She doesn't know yet that we're doing Jeepers Creepers 2 in a couple months. But
is there a new Pet Sematary coming out?
They already made it. It came out like 2 years ago, and it's not, that's what you were thinking of. It's a remake. It's with the actor that played John Connor in the newest Terminator, not the newest Terminator, but like Terminator Genesis, I think. And John Lithgow, or Lithgow, I believe is how he pronounces it, plays the next door neighbor that Fred Wilson played in the original. It's if you watch the, don't watch the trailer. All I can say is don't watch the trailer, because they tell you the entire film in the trailer. Yeah. But I didn't particularly care for it. I preferred the original. I'll even take the sequel with Edward Furlong and Anthony Edwards and Clancy Brown over the remake that they made.
Nice.
With that though, what is a movie that you think you can watch once and you never have to watch it again?
Well, I mean, just like The English Patient. That one's stuck in my brain forever. I just remember the feeling that I had at that time, and just remembering that we had two cassettes at the time. There was, you know, this was back at Blockbuster. We had two cassettes, and I remember like when we had to switch the cassette out. I was like, oh my God, you know, there was no like cell phones back then. There was no internet. And I'm just like stuck watching this movie, and the girl was like way into it. You know, she was just like, I really want to watch this. And, you know, movies were, they were a bigger deal back then. You know, it was a big hoopla. You would go to Blockbuster and pick out the movie and make a night of it. And you didn't want to like not finish the movie, because it wasn't like you could watch it later. You had to have it back the next day. Whereas like now, you know, I could have been like, I'm not into it. Let's watch something else. And then she could have finished watching her own or something like that. But we were stuck with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember a couple movies came out with that double VHS. Titanic was a double VHS. Yeah. And even the longer,
Titanic was good. I like Titanic.
Even some of the longer films, when Goodfellas came out on DVD, they didn't have the technology to put the whole film on one side. So I remember my Goodfellas DVD being a double-sided, that it would reach one point and then it would stop, and then you have to eject the DVD and then flip it over.
So crazy. But at least you didn't have to rewind it.
Right. Big dude, I tell you what, it's a real deal dealing with people rewinding, as having a parent that worked at a video store, as previously mentioned. Right. Half of my time when I was there was just taking movies and putting them in the rewind machine.
And so did you guys charge for rewinding? Because I think that they started doing that at one point.
Some places did. I'm too young to know or remember if the video stores that my mom worked for did, but they for sure had the Be Kind Rewind stickers.
For sure. Yeah.
For
Dude, sure. It's so nuts when you think about it. And to be honest, like, I talk to people about this all the time. I think back then I appreciated movies more. I appreciated everything more. You know, you would movies and music and video games and all that stuff. It was like, you know, you get a new video game or new music or anything like that, you cherish that until the next thing came out. But now it's like you're so focused on what you're going to watch next, you don't even enjoy what you're watching now, you know?
I feel you. But with that, you can get that old school nostalgia. I'm not even going to lie. Like, within the last 3 months, I found an old vintage game store in a local neighborhood, and I bought myself a Game Boy.
Oh, cool.
With Pokemon.
Oh, shit.
You know, I went and got that. I went and got myself a Mario game. And now in my living room, I have a Super Nintendo and a Nintendo 64. And cool. Before we even got on, I was just out there playing Mario 64.
And see, I feel like that's a little different, right? So we have this arcade in Richmond called Circuit, and they have all the old like games. And I was like, man, this could be awesome. And I go there and I start playing them, and I'm like, you know, you get the nostalgia or whatever. But having that feeling, if right now, you know, a new CD came out or something like that, and you had to go to the store and buy that CD and listen to it, and you're not really you don't know what else is coming out, and you only have three CDs at your house or however many CDs you have in your house, and that's all you're going to listen to, there's a different appreciation for that one CD. I mean, how many times do you listen to an album these days? You know, I might listen to, it depends on how much I like it, but I might listen to something like 3-4 times and then I'm on to the next. Whereas back in the days, we'd listen to that same CD
over
50
over.
Times.
Sure.
Until the next CD, till the next best one came out. You know?
Oh, for me, it was, I was lucky enough that my parents got me the CD cassette dual. that I could get the cassette player and then record the tracks that I liked off of one album. And then I take the CD out, put in the next one. I made my own little mixtapes to where I remember one mixtape that had a combination of the Beatles off of multiple albums, Michael Jackson off of the Black or White album, and like at least two or three Paula Abdul songs. Because
just go forward.
One step back. that straight up Runaway, Hush, which also might just be Runaway. I can definitely fucks with Paula Abdul, like old school Paula. Like, I'm not ashamed to admit, like, I was into that Cool Cat, dude. I loved that. I loved that video.
I think I had that tape. It was like, I can't remember the cat's name, but it was like something. He had like his own name.
Yeah. Oh, he for sure did. Kids, and that's where it comes to the appreciation. Kids nowadays will never know the appreciation of having to take the time to record a song off of, you know, a bit. And it's funny because, like, I remember that I didn't like Pretty Rita by the Beatles. I wasn't a fan of it, but on my cassette, I had the song, and then it's like the opening three bars of Rita, and then it stops and goes right into the next song from whatever I wanted.
That's awesome.
Like, so you know what I'm saying? Kids will never know having to take the time to really appreciate. You're right with what they have, because I just have a YouTube mix page that I listen to while I'm at work that just has, you know, from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and a little bit of the 2000s. And I don't listen to much music that's made today because most of it's trash. So,
yeah. Well, and the other thing is, like, you know, back in the days we were the ones who went out of our way to figure out a way to save music, you know, like I would listen to the radio. My parents didn't have a ton of money, so I wasn't buying CDs and stuff or tapes. If I bought it, it was with my own money. Mm-hmm. But what I would do is I'd have the tape recorder and I would record stuff off of the radio. And then with that, I would try to, like, they would always say cute 94 at the beginning or it. And so I'd have to like kind of chop that out.
I know what you're talking about.
As annoying as that process sounds, I feel like I appreciated that tape a lot more because I created it and I didn't know when I was going to hear that song again. You know, right? The only time you're going to hear that song again is if you record it and put it on a tape. Whereas like nowadays, you can hear any song you want, anytime you want, and you don't have to do anything but push a button.
I legit remember being on the phone with my dad. My dad was at work, and I remember being in tears with him on the phone, going, "Dad, there is a block of music videos coming up. I don't know if I will ever see them again. I have to get them recorded on this tape." And I could not get the recorder to record what was on the TV. I remember, Jesse, legit being in tears. "Dad, I have got to record Skee-Lo's I Wish."
Yeah. Dude, now everything that you're trying to record,
it's on YouTube. It on YouTube. It's all on, I guarantee. It was a block of like Skee-Lo's I Wish, Seal's Kiss from a Rose, TLC's Waterfall, and like one other, you know, like fucking thing from 1994, 95. It's crazy. With that though, in reality, we do come to the final question of the show. And that's a movie recommendation, a movie that you love or a couple movies that you love that you think the listeners should go and check out.
I mean, I can roll back to that one I recommended to you, the Gentleman. I mean, that's one of my favorite movies in the past year or so. Wolf of Wall Street, of course. Sicario. I don't know. Have you seen a Sicario?
Josh Brolin, right?
Yeah. That's the second one. There's two of them.
Emily Blunt. Well, Emily Blunt's in both of them, right?
Yeah. Benicio del Toro and Emily Blunt. And then I think Josh Brolin's in the second one.
Okay. But
that movie is badass, man. I love it. It's like such a dark movie, but it's really good. You know, Matrix 7, you know, Django, Kill Bill, you know, those are all kind of the normal ones.
That's awesome. With that, we come to the end of the show.
Wait, hold on. What do you recommend? You're the movie dude. I'm just a fucking reality guy.
I mean, it all depends. I mean, in reality, like, if someone ever asks me really for a recommendation, it's always, well, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a comedy, a horror, an action, a romance?
I'm looking for your top three favorite movies you've ever seen in your entire life. That if I was going to die in 2 days, I'd need to watch those three movies.
Blues Brothers is definitely like my probably all time favorite film. I'd probably say Blues Brothers, Clerks by Kevin Smith, and man, you need a good final one. Darjeeling Limited.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, what's that director's name, the one that does all those?
Wes Anderson?
Yes, that's what it is. Wes Anderson. He does what was the one with Bill Murray. He's underwater and
the life of Steve Zissou.
Yeah.
The aquatic life. The aquatic life. Steve Zissou. Yes. Kevin
Smith's another one. I didn't even think about that. I really liked what was that one with the lesbian girl, Amy?
Chasing Amy.
I really like that one a lot. Mallrats.
Chasing Amy is actually I'm trying to write every day. I'm trying to write a story and I'm trying to write every day, at least a page. And there are movies that I will put on for background noise. And only movies. Like, I can't put on music because I'll get distracted. For some reason, I can just put on movies and it's fine. And it's like Breakfast Club, Chasing Amy, and House on Haunted Hill are the three movies that I can put on that are just good background noise for me. I know the movie well enough. And it's funny because Chasing Amy is actually is lower on my list of Kevin Smith films. It's not my least.
What do you like better than that one?
Clerks, Mallrats, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Dogma is actually probably my least favorite.
Was like super produced.
For Kevin Smith, my least favorite is probably Jersey Girl. But if you're talking the Jay and Silent Bob skewniverse, as he likes to call it, it's Dogma is probably my least favorite.
What's that guy's name? Jesse Lee, is that his name? James Lee? Jason Lee, yeah. What's the one where he's like an inker or tracer?
That's Chasing Amy.
I love that scene, man, when they're talking and he's getting all mad. He's great.
So if you have someone that is drawing inside the lines and coloring something that someone already drew, what would you call them? Very young Casey Affleck. I don't know, a tracer.
Yeah. We do that, you know, we do that all the time in the tattoo world. You know, we do a little collaboration, somebody draws, someone colors it, someone, you know, whatever. To me, it's just, you know, it's collaborating.
Sure, it's art, and that's what it comes down to,
right?
Well, that's awesome. With that, we come to the plugs. Where can people find you online? Are your shops open? I don't know. You're out on the East Coast, right?
Yeah, I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and yeah, you can pretty much find me online at Jesse Smith Tattoos, JesseSmithTattoos.com, at Jesse Smith Tattoos. If you Google search that, you'll find me everywhere.
Awesome. And I'll also get all those handles and they'll be in the link to this episode. As we come to a close here at the last podcast you'd want, we try and keep a PMA, a positive mental attitude. Do you have any words of positivity or a personal mantra that you'd like to leave the guests with as we exit the show?
Oh man, I don't know if I'm the right person for this. I mean, I definitely think I have a positive attitude, but being able to give anybody any sort of advice or mantra is not something that pops off the top of the head.
No, that's all right. That's all right. Jesse, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, do you have one? We got to have one, right?
My personal mantra is a quote from Charlie Chaplin, and that is, a day without laughter is a day wasted.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, I'm a big goofball. I like to see the lighter side of life. I'm the guy that you know, when someone I know and love dies, I'm usually cracking wise, mainly because I don't want to deal with what's actually at hand.
Oh, yeah.
But Charlie Chaplin said, you know, a day without laughter is a day wasted. And I think it's true. I think everyone should take the time to admire and see the beauty and humor in something at least once and get a good chuckle for the day. So, I mean, that's what I'd
be. Have you heard that joke? It says, dark humor is like food. Not everybody gets it.
I like that. I'm going to take that. I'm going to put right here in my pocket. I'll save that for later.
That'll be my mantra. You know, I think just being able to find humor in everything, because I feel like everybody's taking everything so serious these days and getting upset about just, you know, little words. They got that movie on, or it's like a documentary by Nicolas Cage about swear words on Netflix now. Have you seen it?
I have not.
It's basically just talking about how swear words and all that stuff, they're all bullshit. You know what I mean? And everything that all these like trigger words that we create for ourselves, they're all bullshit. You end up getting mad because someone said something thinking it's full of all this intent. It's really not.
Sure. Well, I'll have
don't
to
get check. Mad. Just laugh.
I'll have to check that out. And that's a good one. Don't get mad. Just laugh. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been another episode of The Last Podcast You'd Want. And until next week, tip the veal, try the staff. I'll see you then.
Thanks for coming to see our show.
Sad to tell you, we got to go.
Grab your hat and head for the door.
In case you didn't notice, there ain't any more. If you like our show, tell everyone but. If you think it's great, keep your big mouth shut.
If when you came up, we have to shout.
Adios, au revoir.
It's over.